Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 1, observing the armies, text number 20. Atavya vyasti tandrishva. Dhartarasran kapidvaja. Pravrite shastra sampate. Dhanoryamya pandavaha. Rishikesham tathavakyam Hidamaha mahipate Atha. Thereupon Vyavastitan, situated, Drishva, looking upon Dhartarastran, the sons of Dhritarashtra, Kapidvaja, he whose flag was marked with Hanuman. That's not such. We'll try that again. He whose flag. Three times and you're out. He whose flag. Was marked with Hanuman. Pravrite, while about to engage, Shastra Sampate, in releasing his arrows, Danu Bo, Udyamya, taking up Pandava, the son of Pandu Arjuna. Rishikesham unto Lord Krishna. Tata at that time. Vakyam words. Idam these. Aha said. Mahipate. O King. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. At that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot, bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow, prepared to shoot his arrows. O King, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra, drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. Purport, the battle was just about to begin. It is understood from the above statement that the sons of Dhritarashtra were more or less disheartened by the unexpected arrangement of military force by the Pandavas, who were guided by the direct instructions of Lord Krishna on the battlefield. The emblem of Hanuman on the flag of Arjuna is another sign of victory, because Hanuman cooperated with Lord Ram in the battle between Ram and Ravana. And Lord Rama emerged victorious. Now both Rama and Hanuman were present on the chariot of Arjuna to help him. Lord Krishna is Rama himself, and wherever Lord Rama is, his eternal servitor Hanuman and his eternal consort Sita, the goddess of fortune, are present. Therefore, Arjuna had no cause to fear any enemies whatsoever. And above all, the Lord of the senses, Lord Krishna, was personally present to give him direction. Thus, all good counsel was available to Arjuna in the matter of executing the battle. In such auspicious conditions, arranged by the Lord for his eternal devotee, lay the signs of assured victory. Atavya vyasti tandrishva dhartarasran kapidvaja purite shastra sampade tanoridyamya pandava rishikesham tatavakyam hidamaha mahipate. That time Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing a flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O King, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra, drawing a military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words.
You know, to come back tomorrow to find out what the words are.
We didn't read them because otherwise you might not come back once you know the words. Although Srila Prabhupada didn't like to explain the Vedic literature, especially Bhagavad Gita, as an allegory, because there is one famous commentator on the Bhagavad Gita, Mahatma Gandhi, and he said actually the Bhagavad Gita was not a real story. That the Pandavas were the five senses and Krishna was the mind, and it's a story about the five senses and the mind. Another commentator said the Bhagavad Gita is actually a conversation between a doctor and his patient. But at another level, Bhagavad Gita is, well, Prabhupada is explaining the Bhagavad Gita here because Hanuman was on the chariot, therefore it's a story of Hanuman and Ram and Sita Devi. It's part of the Ramayana. And Krishna, of course, is Krishna. But on another level, Bhagavad Gita is also the story of the conditioned soul, especially in Kali Yuga. Because Krishna says, Ishvara Sarabhutanam Rideshe Arjuna Tishtati Brahmayan Sarabhutani Yantra Rudani Maya. That I am situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and I conduct the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material nature. Especially in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the second canto, second chapter, text number 35, that one can perceive the Supreme Lord by both inference and by lakshana, by symptoms. In other words, it's not difficult to realize that Krishna is in our heart. Just like it's not difficult to realize the fact that we're a spiritual being. Similarly, it's not difficult to realize Krishna's relationship with us as Paramatma. And just to summarize that, Prabhupada goes through the purport that this body that we're in is nothing but the combination and permutations of the gross and subtle forms of material nature. And just as we're in a body with the gross and subtle forms of material nature, outside of our body are also the same material elements in different combinations. But in our conditioned state, we can neither perceive nor move without the help of these gross and subtle elements. So our conditioned state is more or less we feel our limitations because we're bound. We can't perceive or move or do anything without the help of these gross and subtle material elements. So our dissatisfaction with our material conditioned experience is because of that. On the other hand, there's another element within the gross and subtle body that we're in, and that's the person who's giving us direction. Just like the father gives direction to his son, or the teacher gives direction to the student. So there's a super soul, there's a supreme soul who's giving us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And at every moment we're being supplied remembrance and knowledge and forgetfulness. If we didn't have forgetfulness, we'd go crazy. We just keep on remembering the same things over and over again. And if we couldn't remember anything, we'd really go crazy, because we wouldn't be able to perceive anything. And if we had no knowledge, we'd just sit there like a stone. But that knowledge is not our knowledge, because sometimes when we were a baby, we had a certain level of knowledge, and hopefully we have a higher level of knowledge now. Because usually the trend is, we're a baby, we grow up, our knowledge to some extent increases, And as we get older, it decreases again. And sometimes at the end of life, we're just like a baby again, preparing for our next baby body. In any case, just like, for instance, knowledge has been provided, if I want to touch this light here, then if Krishna supplies the knowledge, I simply reach over and touch the light. But if he doesn't supply me the proper knowledge, then I may try to touch the light in a different way. A little bit more yoga practice, and I should be able to do it. Good exercise, actually. So, the proper way of doing things is being provided to me by the super soul, or at least some way of doing things. Similarly, for the devotees, Krishna supplies knowledge about himself, and he provides remembrance about himself, and he helps us forget our material conceptions. For the non-devotees, it's exactly the opposite. Krishna helps us forget him. He supplies knowledge about material illusion, and he helps us remember our material desires again and again, our material conceptions. So this depends upon our desire and our relation with Krishna, and so Krishna can help us come to a higher, to the conception of Krishna consciousness, or he can help us go to the darkest regions of material conceptions. So our freedom consists in either orientating our desires towards the ignorant misconception of misidentifying ourselves with a gross and subtle material body, or in orientating ourselves to the true spiritual conception of being a spiritual soul in the process of liberation. At every moment we have that decision which way we want to orientate ourselves. Of course, which way our decision will be based partly upon our knowledge. The more knowledge we have, the more there's a tendency to properly orientate ourselves towards a spiritual realization rather than simply being guided and misdirected by the whims of our senses and material minds and material desires. So at this point in our investigation, we can see that there are three elements. There is a soul, there is a super soul, and there is matter. But we can't conclude that the super soul, and they're all, at least the soul and the super soul, are the same spiritual quality, but there's a difference in quantity. That the soul receives knowledge from the super soul, and the super soul is in everyone's heart, giving everyone remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So the soul is limited to his present material body, but the super soul is all-pervading, directing all living entities. So a little ant is getting directed by the super soul, Brahma is being directed by the super soul, and we're also being directed by the super soul. So there's a difference between the tiny individual soul and the all-pervading, unlimited super soul. But we can't conclude that the only business of the super soul is simply to provide remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness to the infinitesimal souls. That according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Supreme Soul also exists in a spiritual planet where he enjoys, with his liberated associates, loving exchanges. Therefore, bhavanam janmanam ante gyanamam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti saramahatma sudurlabha. After passing through many births and deaths, one who is actually acknowledged surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is, such a great soul is very rare. So here in this verse, Krishna is taking the part of the chariot driver, and in our body, he's also the chariot driver. The soul is actually neither entangled nor doing anything, but is desiring. And Krishna senses a desire, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. So according to how we desire, Krishna arranges through his material nature, according to what we desire and what we deserve. Krishna makes arrangements through the material nature, and then therefore activities are performed by our gross and subtle material bodies, which are actually being directed by the material nature. The soul has no direct influence over the material energy, but by his desire, Krishna arranges so that different arrangements are made by the gross and subtle material nature in order to fulfill his desires according to what he deserves. Therefore, tam eva sharanam gacha sara bhavena bharata tat prasadam paramashantim shastrutam param avyam. Therefore, surrender unto him in all respects, O Arjuna, because by his grace you can obtain transcendental peace and the eternal abode. In other words, we have to recognize the existence of the Supersoul and dovetail our desires with his. And for that reason, Krishna sends his external representatives to tell us what the Supersoul wants us to do, how he wants us to desire. The external representative is not, or the guru, or any kind of guru, Shiksha guru, Diksha guru, Vartma Pradaksha guru, is not supposed to be different from Krishna. It's not that Krishna has one opinion, one of his gurus has a different opinion, and another guru has a different opinion. Everyone has a different opinion, so you just take whatever you want. It's all spiritual. Choose one you like the best. Chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, whatever. It's all ice cream, so it doesn't really matter. No, the guru, whether Shiksha or Diksha or anyone who is advanced spiritually, should have the same understanding, the same opinion, the same vision as Krishna. Otherwise, how can it be guru? How can one claim to be representative of Krishna and not have the same understanding that Krishna has? It's like if you're selling if you're a representative of Apple Computer, but you're selling Dell computers, then how can you claim to be representative of Apple Macintosh if you're selling PCs? Then you're not really representative of Apple, you're representative of Dell computer. So if one is actually representative of Krishna, he has to sell the same product as Krishna. Then he's actually bona fide representative. And as Prabhupada writes in the 18th chapter, Chaitasa sarva karmani maya sanyasya matvaraha buddhi yogama pashitya masita ksaratam bhava. And all activities depend upon me, work always under my protection, in such devotional service be fully conscious of me. So every representative of Krishna has the same siddhanta, and our siddhanta is quite simple. Everything here belongs to Krishna. That's a whole siddhanta. You just learn the whole siddhanta. And everything is meant to be utilized in Krishna's service, second part of the siddhanta. And only in that way can we benefit ourselves or anyone else, third part of the siddhanta. So one understands that Krishna is the enjoyer, Krishna is the controller, Krishna is the proprietor, Krishna is the real friend of everyone. Then we've learned the siddhanta. Next thing is what we're supposed to do. If Krishna owns everything, then everything is meant for his service. So what to do? So, Prabhupada writes, if one takes instruction from Krishna in this book, as well as a representative of Krishna, then that will be as good as if Arjuna and Krishna, we were with Krishna, like Arjuna was, on the same chariot as Krishna, during the battle of Kurukshetra. In other words, we may not be presently directly sitting on a chariot with Krishna, nor will we be able to fight very well in the battle of Kurukshetra. We would have gotten knocked out in the first minute. Someone would have thrown a paperclip at us, we would have fell off the chariot. In any case, luckily we're not on the battlefield of Kurukshetra right now. It would be very unfortunate. Or maybe not so unfortunate if Krishna was on the chariot. But Krishna is on our chariot. He's in as a super soul. He's also directing us. It's just that we may not hear him very clearly. And therefore Krishna sends his representative, guru or representatives, guru, sadhu, and shastra, which are all supposed to be non-different from him, what he's telling us. There can't be two opinions. Guru can't say one thing, sadhu says something different, and the shastra says something different. They're all supposed to tell us what the super soul is trying to tell us. Then what are they telling us? When we finally figure out what they're telling us, then Madhparahad probably gives the example that one should have no goal in life, save and accept, act in Krishna consciousness, just to satisfy Krishna. That's the whole idea of what we're trying to do. And generally it's not so complicated. Krishna says, take prasadam. Generally we don't doubt that. Does he really want me to take prasadam? Is it really bona fide? Is it authorized? Maybe I should study the shastra for a couple of days to find out whether taking prasadam is really authorized by Krishna. I've never heard any debate on that. Everything else people have discussed but, or argue about, but not about that. So, the word Madhparahad is very important in this connection. One should have no goal in life, save and accept, act in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. So, we should be conscious of Krishna and act as please Him, and we should do what He wants us to do. And one should think only, I have been appointed this particular duty by Krishna, to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. And I have no goal in life, save and accept, act in Krishna consciousness, just to satisfy Krishna. And one should think only, I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna, and I'm doing it just to please Him. So that's, then what is the result? That one will naturally think about Krishna in Krishna consciousness. That's the perfection of our activities, to think about Krishna in Krishna consciousness. There's no other way of judging it. And if we're doing that, then Guru should be in our heart, our disciple succession should be in our heart, Panchatattva should be in our heart, and the Krishna will be in our heart. And that's our perfection of life in Krishna consciousness. Our perfection of life is to become conscious of Krishna. There's no other perfection. Not that I distributed the most books, I got award because I was the best pujari, I got an excellent glabdhaman, I took sannyas, I became the GPC, therefore my life is, well, maybe not GPC, I became the temple president, my life is successful. No, our success in life is just to think about Krishna. That's our reward for doing a proper service, for understanding. And if we're not thinking about Krishna, then whatever we're doing, to some degree, is not very successful. That's why we're called the Krishna Consciousness Movement. It's not called the money-making movement, the ward movement, the elevation, material elevation movement. It's called the Krishna Consciousness Movement, to help us become conscious of Krishna. And luckily, Krishna is God. That's why we're trying to become conscious of Him. He's the reservoir of pleasure, and anyone who comes in contact with Krishna with the proper consciousness, they become also absorbed in an ocean of pleasure. If you dive into an ocean of pleasure, it's very difficult not to experience pleasure. So if we dive into Krishna consciousness, it's impossible not to become ecstatic. We don't have to try to become ecstatic. It's just if we become conscious of Krishna, then naturally we'll become ecstatic. If you go into a fire, you're going to get hot. If you enter into the sun, you don't have to take a thermometer with you to find out what the temperature is. You'll be sure it's warm. So that's our business, and that's why Arjuna became successful. Not just because he won the battle, but because he served Krishna, who was with him. That was his success. That was his victory. And we can also become victorious if we serve the Lord in our heart. And then he says, Tesham sadatam yukdanam bhajantam priti purvakam didami buddhi yogam tam mam yena mam upiyanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to worshiping me with love, then I give them the understanding by which they can come back to me. So if we constantly devote ourselves in Krishna's service with enthusiasm, care and attention, with love, affection, then Krishna will give us a supply more and more realizations to us by which we can make more and more progress, becoming more and more, as Prahlad Maharaj said, I don't want any benediction from Lord Nrisimhadeva, but if you want to give me any benediction, then I pray that my devotional service may become more strong and steady. So if we perform devotional service sincerely, with enthusiasm and steadiness, conviction, then the result is that it'll become even more strong and steady, and then ultimately we'll come to a higher and higher levels of becoming conscious of Krishna. Or as it says in the Madhurya Kandambini, our meditation on Krishna will become more steady and will expand more and more. So one day it will become so steady and expanded that we'll actually be entering into Krishna's pastimes, like our Goswamis did, even when they were present here. In our spiritual bodies, we can enter into Krishna's pastimes, even while still seemingly residing in the material existence. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
How does a desire in the heart change from seeking pleasure in material things to pleasure with the desire?
Well, we're hearing. We're hearing how wonderful Krishna consciousness is. And if you follow the process, then you'll get some higher taste. Krishna will reciprocate and give us a higher taste. If we go on Harinam and we feel some ecstasy, then the next time they ask us to go on Harinam, we'll probably go on Harinam because we want to experience ecstasy again. We go on Harinam, the only thing that happens is that a gang of hoodlums attack us and beat us up. The next time they ask to go in Harinam, we may think, well, maybe. We may hesitate a little. Unless we have some bodyguards or something. So, depends on our experience. If we follow the process, hearing, chanting, serving, whatever, and we get a higher taste, then we want more of a higher taste. If you like strawberry ice cream, and you eat some and it's really good, what happens? You want some more of it. If you can eat it, or if you have enough money for it. So the more we experience Krishna consciousness, the more we'll want to experience Krishna consciousness, even more.
So it's sadhana bhakti, and then you do sadhana bhakti, and then something comes from.
Yeah, that's, even if we, as it says, there are five powerful processes of devotional service: chanting the holy names, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, serving the devotees, worshipping the deities, and living in a holy place. And a little sincere service during any one of these five powerful processes, one can experience a little bhava, a little ecstasy, a little feeling, taste. So it's available. It's just a question of how much we concentrate our minds and give our love to Krishna. How steady and how enthusiastic is our service. Anything else? Khwala, Kantaraj Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande. Oh.